This is Audible.
William Morrow and Harper Audio present Boundless, a Drizzt novel by R.A. Salvatore. Performed by Victor Bavine. Prologue. The Year of Dwarvenkind Reborn. Dale Reckoning, 1488. He could hear the labored breathing of his poor pony, but Regis didn't dare slow, for the shadows within the shadows were not far away, black, misshapen things, lumbering and twisted by evil and unrelenting anger. Demons. Everywhere in the forest, demons. The halfling weaved about the trees, urging poor Rumblebelly on. He came down around a stone, the trail bending to the south and into a clearing. He winced, noting the sheen of sweat on his pinto's brown and white coat. At least now he could stop, but only briefly, and only because Showwithall Turdity, one of the leaders of the grinning ponies, rode into the small clearing from the other direction.
"Where is Dorigardo?"
Regis asked, pulling up alongside his friend. Showwithall nodded back the way he had come.
"The wood's thick with the fiends," he said. "We'll not get through."
"And they're all heading in the same direction," Regis added.
Showwithall nodded.
"Dorigardo is convinced that these monsters are guided by a greater purpose, and that they know of bleeding vines," he explained. "The beasts are moving in a wide arc, by all reports, coming up and down the line, and will strike the town all at once."
"Then you've got to get there before them," Regis ordered. "All of you, turn about and ride as if the lives of all in Bleeding Vines depend upon your speed, for surely that is the truth."
"The farms, the villages,"
Regis shook his head.
"You cannot get to them. And even if any of you did, you'd only be leading demons to new victims. The farmers will hear the monsters. They have lived in the wilds all their lives. They will shelter and hide. You must get to Bleeding Vines, all of you."
"All of us, Spider Paraffin," Showwithall corrected.
Again Regis shook his head.
"Waterdeep must be told," Regis explained.
It was terribly hard for him to speak those words. He wanted nothing more than to turn about and gallop all the way back to Bleeding Vines, then ride the tram beside his beloved Donala and his dear Rumblebelly all the way to the safety of Gontalgrim. But he could not. Not now. Not in this life. In his previous life, Regis had been the tag-along, too often making victory more difficult for his beloved companions of the hall instead of helping them to achieve their goals. At least, that's the way he viewed it. In those long-ago years, Regis had been the least of the heroes. This time, this rebirth, he had determined to change that course. He would be no burden. He would live as a hero worthy of the friendship of Drizzt, Brunner, Catti Bree, and Wulfgar. Now his path was clear before him. He had to get to Waterdeep, the great city of splendors, the crown of the north, the most influential and powerful city in all of Faerun. The lords of Waterdeep could turn back the demon tide, and Regis had to get to them.
"If you're on to Waterdeep, then you're not riding alone,"
Showwithall insisted, moving his own pony up beside Rumblebelly.
"Go tell the grinning ponies to return to Bleeding Vines," Regis ordered. "That mission, too, is critical."
A commotion in the trees to the side turned the two. Demons.
"Go,"
Regis ordered, and he slapped the flank of Showathol's pony, sending the mount leaping away, then quick-turned Rumblebelly and galloped off into the darkness in the other direction. Heavy footsteps followed him as he wove again through the trees, and buzzing loomed overhead above the canopy.
"I know, my friend," he whispered into poor Rumblebelly's ear. "Give me this run and you'll find a rest."
Regis didn't believe it. He knew Rumblebelly would give him all that he asked for, but understood, too, that he would likely run his beautiful blue-eyed pony quite literally to its death. But he had no choice. They were all around him. They were above, and he found out to his great dismay, they were below him, for the ground to the side erupted suddenly, huge pincers snipping tree roots with ease, and a massive demon clawing up from the earth. A hulking, four-armed Glabrezu emerged with long, loping strides, easily pacing Rumblebelly. Behind Regis, a vulture-like fiend leaped and half-flew, half-ran in close pursuit. Rumblebelly's breathing came in ragged gasps, and Regis knew that he could no longer outrun this demon. Still he said, "No," and he put his head lower, coaxing his poor mount ahead more swiftly, recklessly even, and hoped that he would not crash into a tree. No halfling had ever ridden a pony better than Dorigardo, Showathol Tertiddy fervently believed, and his dear friend was proving it to him yet again. Dorigardo effortlessly took his black stallion through the tangle of trees, hardly slowing for the obstacles and brambles, anticipating each turn far ahead and leaning in, urging his pony ever forward, obviously confident that the animal would obey. That the mount had full confidence in him was just as obvious. A host of demons chased Dorigardo, including several he had cleverly and brilliantly pulled from their pursuit of Showathol. They would not catch Dorigardo, Showathol believed. No one could catch the great Dorigardo of the grinning ponies. He paced his mount down a slope into another copse of trees, the demons scrambling close behind. Despite his confidence, Showathol held his breath and indeed grimaced when he saw those trees shaking violently and heard the growls and roars and shrieks of the fiends. But Dorigardo came galloping out the side, he and his mount showing not a mark as far as the distant Showathol could see, and there was no immediate pursuit. Indeed, the battle in the copse continued. Showathol Tertiddy managed to smile despite the desperate situation. Dorigardo had turned the demons back on each other, a tangling mess of clawing, biting, chaotic frenzy. When the two rejoined in a small clearing a short time later, it was clear that Dorigardo had bought them both some time.
"Our companions have all turned back for bleeding vines," Dorigardo told his second in command. "We've lost none, but that will not hold true for long." "Too many of the beasts," Showathol agreed.
As if on cue, the brush behind them began to shake violently, and a pair of misshapen demons burst into the clearing. The halfling pair were already away, though, Dorigardo letting Showathol lead in a straightaway run for the distant settlement, while he went back into his forest dance. But more shadows loomed at their flanks, and a loud buzzing sound followed them overhead, and for all their efforts and all of Dorigardo's brilliant maneuvering, when the pair joined once more on a wide road farther along, they knew that they were in deep trouble. They came together again soon after in another small clearing, now understanding the depth of their predicament.
"Others will make it," Dorigardo said somberly to his friend. "We'll make it," Showathol insisted.
Dorigardo nodded, but clearly he was not convinced. Nor were Showathol, for now the moving shadows were ahead of them, left and right in the trees.
"Right then," Dorigardo remarked. "Full charge, you. Head down and gallop for all your pony's life. I'll keep our ugly fiend friends busy. My love to Spider and Lady Dinala, aye?"
He kicked his pony and started away, but barely got moving, for Showathol grabbed his reins, holding him and the pony back. Dorigardo looked at him curiously.
You'll break me clear only for me to be caught farther along,
Shoathal explained.
And you know it. Only Dorigardo can get to Bleeding Vines, and only alone.
Others will get there, Dorigardo insisted.
Perhaps. But is that a chance you are willing to take? How many will be slaughtered if they are not forewarned?
Warn them, then, and I will join you.
No,
Shoathal said softly.
You go. All speed.
I'll grant you a head start.
The two halflings, friends for all their lives, comrades in arms for decades, shared a long look, one of friendship and brotherly love, and of acceptance.
Go,
Shoathal said. Still, Dorigardo shook his head.
You will make a waste of my valor, said Shoathal.
Dorigardo started to respond, but there was really nothing he could say. He didn't believe that either of them would get out of the forest alive, but if one had a chance, given a head start here, it would, of course, be him.
Pray, Regis. Spider makes water deep, he said.
Pray Dorigardo makes Bleeding Vines, Shoathal replied. And pray he gets Lady Dinala and all the others down to the safety of King Brunner's mighty gates.
I will see you there then, my friend, Dorigardo said. In Gondolgrim, where the demon horde will falter.
Shoathal nodded, but couldn't find the strength to audibly respond. He yanked back on the reins, then slapped Dorigardo's black pony on the rump as it moved past him. Dorigardo charged away, and Shoathal Turdity drew his sword. It seemed a meager weapon indeed, measured against the hulking forms scrambling about the shadows.
So be it.
Despite the pursuit, Regis had to slow Rumblebelly as he descended a steep decline. Reins tight in his left hand, the halfling grasped the small hand crossbow hung about his neck and kept glancing back, expecting a huge demon to come leaping down upon him. They were close, he knew, and yet none had attacked thus far. He breathed a bit of relief when the ground leveled and cut right around a boulder at the bottom of the decline, gathering up to a gallop once more on the level trail. But Regis was riding blind here, in an area he did not know, and the trail proved a false one, a dead end. A wall of trees loomed ahead. He had nowhere to go. He pulled up short and swung about, his only options to go back the way he had come or to abandon Rumblebelly and run off on foot through the tangle. Around the boulder, not too far behind, came a pair of monsters, the giant, four-armed, dog-faced demon, thrice the halfling's height, and another, not much smaller, that resembled a weird cross between a large humanoid and a buzzard. Regis considered his puny weapons, fully confident that either of these monsters alone could easily tear him apart.
"We die together, Rumblebelly," he said,
as the pair slowly approached, their stalking angles clearly coordinated and leaving him no room to charge past them and break free.
"I could not find a more valiant companion with whom to share these last, most glorious moments. What ho!"
Rumblebelly reared and whinnied as if in agreement, and as the pony came back to all fours, Regis moved to kick him into a charge. He held, though, and tugged the reins more forcefully to hold back the sweating steed, for across the way, the demons had turned, not back, but upon each other. The vulture demon of rock started it, swinging about suddenly, so abruptly that it stumbled upon its companion, giving some strange, strange shriek, then leaping high, flapping its wing-like arms and falling down hard on the four-armed monster, snapping its head forward to drive its pointed beak powerfully into demon flesh. It aimed for the neck and almost got it, which would have ended the fight immediately. But the Glabrezu turned just enough to take the hit in its shoulder. Both of its pincer arms immediately clamped around the vrock, and the much heavier Glabrezu continued its turn, throwing itself and its attacker off balance to fall upon the ground in a heap, where they rolled and thrashed, punching, biting, pecking, and those great and terrible pincers snapped and dragged, digging deep gouges in the vrock, from which spurted green bile and black blood. Regis didn't know how to decipher the scene before him. He knew demons were chaotic in the extreme, knew that they would kill anything, even each other. But never could he have expected this sudden turn, not with a plump halfling and a plumper pony right there for easy feasting. So shocked was he that he couldn't respond for many moments as the two fiendish behemoths rolled and gored each other with demonic abandon. He did wince, though, repeatedly at the ghastly sounds emanating from the monstrous battle, and Rumblebelly flattened his ears and backed away nervously. Regis was a seasoned enough rider to recognize that his poor pony was near the edge of collapse here, with fright if not exhaustion. That brought the halfling from his trance. He leaned forward and whispered assurances in his pony's ear.
"Come, Rumblebelly," he said. "Easy now, and let us get past these beasts."
He edged his pony forward, veering to the side, and if a pony could be said to tiptoe, Rumblebelly was doing exactly that. Regis didn't turn to regard the rolling, battling demons. He stayed low, continuing to whisper into Rumblebelly's ear, preparing to launch the pony into a leap and run. He was about to do just that when both he and his pony jerked suddenly, startled. Regis sat up straight, while Rumblebelly desperately backed up once more, head going high in surprise and terror as a dark form flew across in front of them. That form, the body of the vrock, hit a tree and wrapped halfway around it, sliding down to the ground at its base, black smoke rising from the corpse as the dead thing sank back across the plains of existence to the smoldering abyss. That left the Glabrezu, rising up to its full height, battered but very much alive and very, very angry. The demon moved out from the side of the trail, forearms out wide as if daring the halfling to try to ride past it. Regis knew he couldn't make it. He thought to dismount and attack, opening the way for his beloved pony. But where might Rumblebelly go?
"We fight, my valiant steed," he said aloud, trying to exude confidence and lifting his fine rapier up into the air before him. "For Rumblebelly, for Bleeding Vines, for the companions of the hall."
By the time De Regarda regained full control of his startled mount, he had put some distance between himself and Showethal, and had left his friend out of sight as his pony dodged down and around some trees, then crested a short ridge and clambered down the backside. The leader of the grinning ponies pulled the reins hard, his pony leaning back and skidding to a stop. Then, with legs and expert control of the bridle, De Regarda had his mount quickly into a gallop. Horse and rider nearly got run over then as Showethal's pony charged past. Showethal's riderless pony. Only then did De Regarda recognize the screams behind him, the wails of his friend. He kicked his pony and leaped away, but skidded again at the sound of a last, desperate, dying shriek. De Regarda's friendship demanded that he go back for Showethal. De Regarda's responsibility to his people demanded that he continue in the retreat, organizing and warning any allies he could find. But it was De Regarda's pledge to Lady Donala that left no choice in the matter. Bleeding Vines had to be forewarned, or hundreds would die.
"Farewell in the green fields of Mount Celestia, my friend," he whispered to the night wind.
And he pulled his mount around again and charged away for the halfling town. For all his regret, and there was indeed much, De Regarda understood that he had chosen right when he was spotted by the night sentries of Bleeding Vines, hailing him, and he quickly learned, fully oblivious to the coming army of fiends.
"To arms! To arms!"
the halfling sentries shouted. A call carried down the line all about and then through the small village as candles showed in every house. Del Ricardo charged his mount straight for Lady Donala's modest home and met her coming out her door.
"We cannot fight them," he shouted before even properly greeting her.
"To arms, nay, to Gontalgrim, or we all shall die."
"Them?"
"Demons, milady, such a horde as I have never seen and never heard in the songs of bards. Demons to rival the flights of dragons that laid waste to Vasa in the time of the Witch King."
Lady Donala, who of course was well aware of Del Ricardo's penchant for hyperbole, arched her eyebrow at that.
"Shoawithal is dead, milady,"
Del Ricardo told her somberly. And it so happened that Shoawithal's pony was not far away, standing forlornly, untethered and unattended.
"Where is Regis?"
she asked with sudden urgency.
"Determined to get word to Waterdeep."
"You just said—"
she started to reply, but her voice trailed off. Del Ricardo understood her resignation here, for they both knew that Regis would not be easily turned from such a mission when it was clearly so critical for the survival of Bleeding Vines.
"We cannot fight them," Del Ricardo told her. "We cannot stop them. To Gontalgrim, I beg, and let us pray that King Brunner's defenses will hold back the horde."
"You question the might of Gontalgrim?"
Donala retorted, shaking her head. Del Ricardo didn't answer, but just sat stone-faced upon his stallion.
"That many?"
Donala asked.
"Run, lady, I beg. Do not even try to stop them or slow them. Just run!"
The word went out from Donala to her personal guards, and from them to the sentries. And so the retreat to Gontalgrim echoed all through the small town. Halflings grabbed whatever they could carry and ran for the tunnel entrance to the dwarven city, where one tram was always stationed at the ready, and another could be quickly retrieved from the mountain depths. On Donala's order, Del Ricardo rode over to the tram platform to organize the retreat at that most critical choke point. Other members of the Grinning Ponies and the Kneebreakers filtered into the town from the surrounding hills and forests, many carrying wounds from skirmishes with the demonic horde. Any who could help did so, the disciplined group aiding the other halflings to board the carts, then sending the tram away into the dark decline to Gontalgrim as soon as the next one's lights were spotted in the return tunnel. Families, children, horses, livestock, pets and treasure came with every group, all rushing to board the tram, and despite the lack of notice, the evacuation seemed to be progressing smoothly. But then the demonic howls began to echo, carried on the wind, and a great buzzing sound filled the air as a swarm of flying chasmes bore down on the doomed village. Del Ricardo shouted orders every which way, his subordinates relaying them.
"Flying monsters," one told him. "Call the gals and boys together," Del Ricardo determinedly replied. "We fight to the last that our friends will escape."
Not a grinning pony, not a Kneebreaker blinked at that expected command. In many ways, it was unnecessary for Del Ricardo to utter it. They formed up without complaint. Pony ears went flat all up and down that line when the dark cloud of chasmes appeared over a nearby hill, black against the starry sky, and in that moment, Del Ricardo feared that most of the village would be slaughtered. That feeling only deepened when another black cloud appeared, this one right overhead, filled with flashes of lightning.
"What demon magic this?"
one of the halfling band cried.
"Nah!"
came a gruff response that had the halflings, Del Ricardo included, looking back toward the tram, to see an old dwarf staring back at them.
"That's just me, brudder,"
Ivan Boulder-Shoulder explained as the thunder began to rumble. A strong wind kicked up, blowing straight in the ugly faces of the flying demons, slowing their approach. Bolts of lightning shot out of the cloud, not randomly, but aimed, slicing into the monstrous flock.
"Me brother,"
Ivan Boulder-Shoulder said with a proud smile, mimicking Pickle's strange accent. The second loaded tram rolled from the elevated station into the dark cave, diving down into the mountain. Up came the third, rambling into place, and this one was filled with dwarven warriors, clan battlehammer soldiers, who leaped out and formed a defensive line, ushering fleeing halflings through. Dorigardo's chest swelled with pride and hope at the precision and discipline of his own people and their brave neighbors. Still, he knew that he and his charges would be in desperate battle soon, for the magical cloud would not be enough to fully halt the demonic aerial swarm. Holding heavy crossbows, a host of battle-hammered dwarves ran in front of Dorigardo's defensive cavalry line. As one, they fell to a knee, leaving enough space between each for a pony to pass through, and lifted their weapons at the coming threat. Down at the right end of the line, not far from Dorigardo, the dwarven commander barked out her command to hold. Despite the dire circumstances, Dorigardo couldn't suppress his grin when he regarded the dwarven woman. He wasn't sure whether it was Fist or Fury, Tannerbritches or Malabritches, the twin queens of Gontalgrim. It was one of them, though, a wife of King Brunner himself, out here on the very front line to hold back a horde of demons. The chasmes closed. Another bolt of lightning reached out, shooting a line of destruction down the middle of the pack, blasting some to shreds, searing the delicate wings off many others so that they fell spinning to the ground. But Pickle's cloud was dissipating, and many of the demons remained.
"Let fly!" the dwarven commander yelled, and as one, the crossbowmen fired, a swarm of heavy bolts reaching into the night sky, a few converging on the same target as the skilled battlehammers chose their marks accordingly. A dozen more chasmes fell out of the air.
"Load!" came the immediate order, already being carried out.
"For Queen Malabritches!"
shouted one dwarf near Dorigardo, clarifying the commander's identity for him. "Huzzah!" they all yelled, and the halflings joined in. Down came the demons, and out leaped the halfling cavalry.
"Fours!"
Dorigardo yelled, and the riders broke into diamond-shaped formations with their mounts.
"Up tall, battlehammers!" roared Queen Malabritches, "and put the high low!"
Dorigardo didn't quite know what that command might mean, and he was too busy to figure it out at the moment. Leading his foursome, he charged upon a trio of chasmes, the demons rearing, their long stingers twitching in anticipation of the taste of blood. Two remained close to the ground to engage the halflings, but the third, the central one at whom Dorigardo was charging, lifted up higher suddenly, while its companions sped in vice-like at Dorigardo. He spun his pony expertly, sword going one way to fend off one chasme, the pony bucking and kicking out behind to send the other flying. And Dorigardo understood the dwarf queen's command, for a host of crossbow bolts crackled the air above him, slamming into the rising demon as soon as it had gotten clear of Dorigardo's head, killing the beast, putting the high low as she had ordered. Dorigardo's three companions came in hard to the fight, a pair overwhelming the chasme he had fended with his sword, driving the ugly half-human, half-insect monster down low with their long spears, then trampling it with their well-trained mounts. To the other side, the chasme, stunned by Dorigardo's pony, lifted up as the group galloped in, but it flew too high and a volley of dwarven crossbow bolts ripped it apart. It was a good start, but it was only a start, Dorigardo knew, and his group was under assault again before they had even properly reformed their diamond. Off to his right came calls for help from other riders as the cavalry worked hard to keep up with the more maneuverable and quicker chasmes. But many of those demons swept right over the halflings, facing another crossbow volley in order to close in on those dwarves. Enough got through, though, and Dorigardo understood that his aerial support was at its end when Queen Malabritches commanded, "Axe!" The halfling worked his sword across his body at one attacker, then brought it back just in time to intercept the sudden rush of another, the slashing blade halving the demon's long proboscis. Dorigardo took the moment of reprieve to glance back at Malabritches' forces to see if they needed help. His gaze went beyond the dwarven line, though, despite the heavy combat all along it, and he noted the last car of another tram disappearing into the mountain on its way to Gontalgrim. It was replaced almost immediately by a fourth, another filled with battlehammer warriors, and not just any battlehammers, but the famed Gutbuster Brigade. These elite, vicious battle ragers leaped from the tram before it had even climbed the platform and settled into place, hitting the ground running, rolling, bouncing, it didn't matter, contorting themselves every which way to get to the fight as quickly as possible. That heartened Doregardo, of course, but it also frightened him. Their only course, he believed, was to cover the last fleeing villagers, then themselves retreat with all haste to the greater defenses of Gontalgrim. True to their reputation, the battle ragers didn't seem as if they were in any mood for a retreat. The stubborn fools would probably remain out here in their battle lust, even after all the innocents had been evacuated. If that was the case, the halfling leader decided they would be on their own. He turned back with his team, the diamond shifting to go out to the right, where a family of halflings ran for their lives from a pursuing flying demon. As they moved to intercept, Doregardo noted rustling from the distant trees. The horde had come, and now it pounced upon them, misshapen humanoid forms, the wretched lesser demons known as Manes, shambling out of the brush like an army of humans risen from the dead. Behind them, between them here and there, came their masters, the true demons of all types, enough of them alone, not even counting the multitude of Manes and Kazmes, to be considered an overwhelming force. "Get them in quick, my riders," he told his three companions. They had just put themselves between the halflings and the pursuing beasts, engaging the Kazme, when a cracking sound drew the cavalry leader's eyes to the tree line once more. He worried that yet another foe was emerging. Instead, he saw, standing before the advancing horde, a lone figure, a green-robed dwarf, one arm raised and waving. The dwarf was calling upon the grasses and trees, Doregardo realized, and the plants were listening. Branches bent to swat at demons. Grasses wrapped the ankles of the manes, slowing some, stopping others. Hope blossomed. But only for a moment, for then a hulking demon put an end to the dwarven druid's spell. A mighty Balor demon, the greatest of demon kind other than the demon lords themselves, had come. All darkness and fire, the powerful creature stamped its foot, sending rolling flames outward to punish the grass and shrubs that dared try to grasp it. And it moved determinedly for the lone dwarf, its whip of fire rolling high, snapping forward and spewing deadly flames. It cracked right above the dwarf, Pickle Bouldershoulder, who melted downward below it, and the whip spat forth a tremendous fireball. Though it was far away, the heat of the blast washed over Doregardo. He strained to see through the smoke to catch sight of the dwarf. But no. He had to consider that Pickle, the sommelier of bleeding vines, the druid green thumb who had fostered the wonderful vineyard, had been killed. And Doregardo knew that he couldn't go to Pickle or to his body. They were out of time. He called for his group to turn, shouted a general retreat, and galloped back toward the tram station. Other diamond groups linked up with them, and they shifted their formation accordingly, riding tight, fighting defensively, a host of spears and swords lifting to fend off any Kazme that got too near. Back by the trams, the battle ragers leaped and spun, throwing themselves upon demons and simply shaking the beasts to shreds under the ridges of their sharpened armor so effectively that Queen Malabridges had nearly half of her contingent up with crossbows again, while the rest gathered up the fallen, more than a dozen, and dragged them for the tram. Away went that train, and yet another came up, and more dwarves joined the fight, and there, in a semicircle right before the tram station, the halflings and the dwarves made their stand as the last of Bleeding Vines' civilians, including Lady Dunulla herself, rode that tram away.
"Now we die," Doregardo told his soldiers, "so die well."
And he shared a grim nod with Queen Malabridges.
"You should go, good queen," he told her. "My sister'll be giving Brunner his heirs,"
she replied with a smile and a wink, and she banged her warhammer hard against her shield. In came the manes, and the halflings and dwarves cut them down 20-1. but there were enough of the wretched beasts to accept those losses and still prevail. Another tram rolled up, though with few dwarves aboard this time, for Gauntlegrim was obviously calling for a full retreat.
"Ponies!" Dorigardo yelled, and it was echoed down the line. In such close quarters, the ponies would become a liability.
But of course, there wasn't a grinning pony or a knee-breaker who would not sacrifice his or her own life for their beloved mounts. So they dismounted, many already had, and started to usher their horses toward the tram. But loading a pony on a tram was no easy task in calm times, and with the battle raging all around, such an action seemed more dangerous than fighting a demon. He had no easy answers and lamented that his beloved mount was likely doomed. Even as those melancholy thoughts threatened to crash over him, a piping melody filled the air above the din of battle, the clashing weapons and the demonic shrieks, and the halfling watched in amazement as a dwarf, the one and only Pickle Bouldershoulder, stepped out from a tree, not from beside a tree, but out of a tree, playing the pipes with surprising adeptness. The music from those pipes calmed the ponies, and they boarded the tram placidly as Pickle ran up and down the line, kicking the cart doors closed as each filled. Away went the tram, and Dorigardo took heart that his beloved pony might survive this awful day. He then turned back and launched himself at a demon mane, fully expecting that he would not. The demon responded with a word of its own, a croaking, grating combination of hard syllables that sounded to Regis like a porcupine being rubbed across the flesh of a giant frog. He thought to taunt the demon, but then so suddenly, his only thought was to try, futilely, to hold on to his weapon as the stunning magic of the infernal beast's word of power slapped his consciousness. Dazed, he nearly fell. Dazed, Rumblebelly stumbled sideways. The dog-faced demon grinned wickedly and came forward a step, then thrashed, as the air before it suddenly filled with spinning magical blades, a wall of whirring weapons, cutting and biting at demon flesh. The demon's pincers snapped and swatted, and the floating magical swords clicked and sparked, and some flew wide, dissipating to nothingness. Some struck true, though, and lines of blood erupted about the Glabrezu. But it didn't back down, stubbornly fighting the blades, clearly diminishing them, picking them out of this wall of summoned fury one at a time. Regis didn't know what to make of it, didn't know how this powerful Dwyamer might have come to be. He knew it to be a temporary reprieve, though, and could only hope that the demon would be more severely wounded by the time it got through the wall of bladed mayhem. He looked around to find an avenue of escape, and he saw her. She came out of the trees behind him, behind his pony, startling the halfling so terribly that he nearly fell from his seat yet again. She was beautiful and terrible and powerful, but mostly to Regis, she was beautiful. For he knew this young woman, this powerful drow named Ivanel, daughter of Gromph, friend of Drizzt, and relief flooded through him. He was certain he couldn't beat a Glabrezu. But Ivanel probably could. She walked past him without acknowledging him, her gaze locked on the demon who stared back at her hatefully as it slapped aside the last of the magical blades, its skin hung in tatters, one pincer chipped short, both hands bloody. It did not seem as if it would be falling over dead any time soon, however. Regardless, Ivanel did not falter in her approach.
"Iconti tu Rethnorel, desper Nosferat," she said, then repeated.
The Glabrezu growled.
"Iconti tu Rethnorel, desper Nosferat."
Regis didn't understand the words. It didn't even believe them to be the language of the drow, but he could sense their power. The demon growled again, but came up straight out of its aggressive crouch, almost leaning back. Ivanel kept her determined and steady approach.
"Iconti tu Rethnorel, desper Nosferat," she recited,
and Regis's eyes went wide, as he realized the strength in those words, as if Ivanel's breath, blowing them out, was that of a magical dragon, one designed specifically against the life force of a demon. Rethnarel sounded like a name to him, the demon's name, he decided.
Ikanti tu Rethnarel desper Nosferat.
The halfling noticed black shadows flowing backward from the Glabrezu, as if Ivanel's words had created a killing wind that struck at its corporeal form and blew back the demonic essence animating that physical body. Every syllable hit Rethnarel the way the flowing breath of a speaker might make the flame of a candle blow back. Ivanel was quite literally blowing out the life force of this monstrous fiend.
Ikanti tu Rethnarel desper Nosferat, she continued, her voice growing more powerful still.
She was close enough for the Glabrezu to reach out with its pincer arms and cut her in half, but somehow it could not. The fiend simply stood very still, leaning back from the drow, and it appeared to take all of Rethnarel's willpower and strength just to hold that pose. Ivanel recited the words of power again, then pursed her lips, leaned forward, and blew. And such a gust of wind came forth that the branches of all the trees before her shook as if in a hurricane, and the black shadows of the demon stretched back many strides from its form. Then, as if its entire life force exited with those shadows, the hulking creature lifted off the ground and flapped weirdly, like clothing hung out to dry in that same hurricane. It wobbled, it flew away, it disappeared. Ivanel stopped. She stood very still, clearly trying to compose herself and regain her strength. Finally, she lifted her head, nodded at her handiwork, then looked back to regard Regis. He nearly fell to his knees under the supernatural weight of that stare, not in gratitude, but in worship. He tried to speak his thanks, but his shivering mouth would not form words. Dorigardo came back to consciousness as he tumbled over some small wall, landing hard despite a myriad of hands trying to catch him. It took him a moment to realize he had been pulled into one of the tram carts, and the hands grabbing at him belonged to a pair of dwarves and many of his own grinning ponies' riders. He looked to them, but they didn't return the stare, all instead looking past him and with open horror on their faces. Dorigardo pulled himself up and managed to glance back, and then he understood. For there stood the greatest demon of the field, the mighty Balor of fire and darkness. Dorigardo's thoughts whirled as he tried to remember how he had become unconscious. Had the Balor thrown him into the cart? But no, he realized as the tram rolled away, speeding as it turned down the steeply descending tunnel, for in that moment another form had revealed itself, the lean body of a drow and one he knew. Standing on the raised platform, not in a cart. It was him, Dorigardo thought. The halfling had been hoisted over the back wall of the last cart of the last tram by Drizzt Do'Urden, who was still out there. Dorigardo heard a whistle, clear and smooth, but didn't understand the significance in that moment of confusion and fear, for Drizzt was out there, with the demons, with the Balor. And then the cart made another turn, and the drow warrior was lost to Dorigardo's view.